I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, hi, Madhav Chanapa. Thanks very much for coming on the Press Gazette Journalism Matters podcast. We're here at 1 St Giles, which is just off Shaftesbury Avenue, central London, where the smaller of Google's two big London offices, I think. This is quite impressive, though, four stories here. And you're the director of... Well, you tell me what your title is, I think it's just changed.
Yes, it's Director of News Partnerships for Europe, Middle East and Africa for Google.
You've been doing that for a few years now, haven't you?
Good. Yeah, it's been about 3 years. We just had a little reorganisation, hence the change of title. But essentially the same job for the last 3 years or so.
Basically, as I understand it, you spend a lot of time talking to publishers, helping them make better use of Google and Google products and so on. Is that right?
Yeah, I work in a team that's actually focused solely on the news industry and actually isn't associated with any Google products per se, and so our role is really to be the interface between the news industry and Google, and between Google and the news industry. And what we try to do is work on the collaborations that will help the news industry overall.
And just what are the sort of things that involves, like Google AMP, things like that? Is that right?
Yeah. So I think the major thing that we've done is called the Digital News Initiative, which is our framework for engagement with the news industry. And it has what we call three pillars to it: product development, training and research, and innovation. And so you mentioned AMP. So product development is all really about actually changing the culture of Google a bit, or not a bit, quite a lot, by making it much more open to discussion, dialogue, and collaboration about the product development areas that are useful and helpful for the news industry. And that's where AMP came from. It was through a dialogue that we had through the D&I working group, where we were saying, well, what are the challenges the news industry are facing, and let's figure out ways that we can collaborate. And with AMP in particular, what they said was, and this is about 18 months, 2 years ago now, and they said, look, we're getting inundated with all these platforms coming to us and saying, give us access to your content in this format, with these business terms, from Facebook Instant Articles to, Snapchat Discover to, Twitter Moments to even Google Play Newsstand, right? And they said, it's confusing, can you help? And so our engineers looked at that, and they actually diagnosed the problem was that the mobile web was too slow. Mm-hmm. And once they figured that out, they said, well, this is not a problem that Google can solve. This is an ecosystem and industry issue. And that's why they helped develop AMP as an open source initiative to try and solve that problem, to allow publishers to, focus on content, to do the tech in a very light effort way that's available for all kinds of platforms. And that's where AMP came from. But we've done other stuff in training and research and innovation, which I'll happy to touch on if you want me to.
Yeah, and just briefly, AMP, so you serve the article within Google, and there's a revenue share, that's right, on the advertising, or how does it work? Would you...
No, actually, completely not. So AMP is just a form of HTML. So it's another way of designing your web page, which means that the publisher is 100% in control. And therefore, because of that definition, the publisher is 100% in control of all the revenues, but also the analytics and everything. So it is it's a form of HTML that's designed to make it lightning fast for the user and keep the publisher completely in control as well. And so from a Google perspective, there's no revenue share or anything because it is simply the publisher's web page.
So for Google, why are news publishers important to you? Why do you invest a lot of effort, seemingly, in engaging with them?
So I think there's a number of different reasons for that. Some are almost values-based reasons. So, you know, it sounds a bit cheesy, but, you know, Google is a company that has values. And, you know, we believe that an informed citizen makes for a better society and that access to information is important. That's part of our mission. And the news industry is a core part of that information there. We're also cognizant that, you know, our users are very interested in news, and we want to, you know, one of the things that we try to do is provide them with the highest quality information in our results as we can. And we also think that we're very aligned sort of philosophically in terms of things like the open web and access to information, as I said. So overall, we think we're quite aligned, and that's why we spend quite a lot of effort in, you know, collaborating with the news industry.
So I think you've noticed our campaign we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies for the bluntness of the title, but, you know, Stop Facebook and Google Destroying Journalism. What's your sort of thoughts about that, or your reaction to that when you saw that?
Well, you can imagine it was slightly disappointing since I think that Google does help with journalism. But I think actually it highlights a point that, honestly, I think that Google is very misunderstood and its role in the news ecosystem is misunderstood. And again, to be completely direct with you, I think that, you know, Google shoulders a lot of the blame on that, which is for many, many years, I don't think we communicated very well or at all. We took a very engineering approach to a lot of the things that we did with the news industry. And I think we have been trying to change that, and DNI is a significant step change in how we are engaging with the news ecosystem. And I genuinely believe that Google is a positive part of the ecosystem, and we have a role to play. And what we're trying to do through DNI is we're trying to have the dialogue to see where, you know, how can we do this in the best way? Because at its heart, Google is an engineering company. And, you know, it is not a news company. And we do have people from the news industry like myself and other people who are, you know, even way more experienced than me. But at its core, it's an engineering company. So I think the best things come when news people and engineers and product people have that dialogue about what's really good for the news ecosystem. And things like AMP and the YouTube player for publishers and other things that come as a result of that dialogue.
So I think our point, I guess, is a big point, and it's a difficult one to solve, but it's if you look at the advertising revenue of 2016, the UK, $10 billion spent on display advertising. We reckon about half of that went to Google. Maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe more than half, I don't know, but something like that. Is, you know, whereas all the national and regional newspaper publishers combined, if you look at their online advertising, maybe they're getting 5% of that, so maybe 500 million, that's according to the IAB figures. So I guess that's what we're driving at. I mean, what's your response to those who would say that Google and others who to a certain extent profit from that content aren't sharing enough of the revenue with the people that are investing in creating it?
So again, I think this goes back to the being misunderstood, and I don't want to sound like a teenager on that, but I think it's important to look at the actual data, how we operate. And I think, you know, you made the point that when you look at UK display advertising, and I think it's very important to understand the role that we play in the display advertising market. You know, we are a supplier in the an ad tech supplier in the display market. So if you are a publisher, you can use our tools, whether it's tools like DoubleClick for ad serving, mm-hmm. or other tools that we have in terms of on the supply side as well. But we are a supplier like many others. So the reality of that, and as with all our ad tech platforms, is that we only make money when publishers make money, right? Because we're a supplier and we take a revenue share. And the vast majority of the revenue, you know, normally in excess of 70% goes to the publisher because we're a supplier there. So understanding Google's role in the display business is really important if we're going to have a discussion about the overall ecosystem. You know, I think that is different for different tech companies, and we get lumped in with some of the other larger tech companies as well. But I think, again, to look at this in the appropriate way, you need to understand our role in the ecosystem. And in the display advertising market, we are a supplier, and therefore we only make money when publishers make money. So a lot of the statistics that you've seen have conflated both search and display, and also not taken into account the revenue shares, right?
Yeah. So. I think I'd be right in saying that the vast majority of the 5 billion or whatever billion you make in the UK is search.
Correct.
I guess it's another argument, but I guess that is that search advertising is perhaps the sort of advertising that would have been spent 10 years ago, classified advertising in newspapers.
Potentially, but I also think it goes beyond that, because actually if you look at search advertising, a lot of what we have found is it comes from advertisers that never advertised before at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all, actually, and that's an important evolution of the of that market. I also think there are a lot of things that
the cost threshold's a lot lower, I guess, isn't it? If you're not taking that big page, you're taking
That's right, and you also only pay on the click,
yeah.
Right? As well, so there's a direct ability to understand the ROI there as well. And I think that what I would say there is that that's an important to understand that part of it. But also, I think it goes beyond that in terms of there are other things that we work with local publishers with the reselling of AdWords so that they can think of a overall campaigns that they can run with their sales teams and other things that we do. But again, I see that as being collaborations that we do with the publishing industry.
So one of the things we've been covering a lot recently is what we call ripping culture. I don't know if you use that, are familiar with that expression, but basically, certain publishers are kind of gaming Google and pretty much basing their business model around ripping stories from other websites, adding a little bit of extra, rewording it, adding a bit of background, and kind of a sort of production line approach to journalism, if you like. And I wonder whether that's, to a certain extent, that's Google's fault, because the way its algorithms not discriminate enough between or rewarding the originator of the content versus the 10 people who rip off that content and everyone who copies it in a kind of circle.
Yeah, I think the euphemistic term for ripping is also derivative content.
Right. Yeah.
Right. and I think it's an issue that we look at and take very seriously. I think the challenge is, if we're being completely direct, is that the news ecosystem overall has always operated in a derivative content way,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And where do you draw the line between someone ripping something off and someone building on a story, right?
Yeah.
And I think about this, I think about the best example that I can think of in the UK, it's a little dated now, but probably was MP's expenses,
mm-hmm.
Right? The Telegraph paid a bunch of money,
mm-hmm.
and they got that tranche of stuff. And they started releasing the stories, and everybody followed up on it. And actually, if you looked at some of the coverage, I think you could probably say, yes, it was ripping. But also, there was some of the coverage that I would say, actually, there was a lot of added-on stuff there, right? I remember The Guardian did a really interesting thing where you could actually search that database, right, to actually explore the content themselves, get the users to find the stories, because there was actually so much data there. But I think, going back to your point, again, something I said earlier, what we want to do is we want to deliver the quality results for publishers. And the reality is there are a lot of people out there who try to game Google all the time. Forget the news industry, but that's just a constant thing. We are constantly, the teams are constantly trying to deliver the best results, which is, fighting the gamers. And it's a battle that goes on and on and on. And I think we've made significant movements in that way that we will continue to improve, but it's going to be an ongoing battle.
So what's I sort of said, simplistically maybe, but if you look at the billions that Google makes versus the kind of small amount that the news industry makes, it's not great. But what would you say the biggest things that Google does which are positives for news publishers?
So I think if you look at different elements of what news publishers do, right, I think if you look at on the editorial side and content creation, I think things like Google Search and Google Maps give an amazing access for storytelling tools. And you know, part of DNI is the training and research pillar, and we have teams that go out and train journalists on all the Google tools that you can use to as a working journalist. And I think that's really, really, really helpful for journalists in the newsroom. I think there are a lot of our ad tech tools that, on the commercial side, can make things, help on the revenue side. And again, like I said, we are a supplier in that, so there are other suppliers are available. Mm-hmm. To use an old BBC joke, since I'm ex-BBC. Mm-hmm. But I also think there are other interesting elements that you see growing as well. So if you look at something like Google Cloud, right? There's two elements that I would say within the Google Cloud that the publishers have been looking at that they talk to me about. One is the Google Cloud element that is all the kind of Google tools like Gmail and all, and you know, the Google Docs and things like that, and how they use that for productivity. But they're also, you're able to use Google Cloud with access to kind of machine learning and using that. And there are things like BigQuery, where people are taking data sets and information and running information through that, sometimes for editorial reasons, sometimes actually for business reasons. So I think that's very interesting. I haven't even touched on the video side and YouTube, but I think there are a lot of things. And actually, to be honest with you, that's why it can be quite confusing from a publisher's side. And we've been trying to become a little bit more coherent on that. And you know, we've just developed relatively recently a website where you can look at these different areas and the different things that publishers do. I can plug that if you want.
Please do. What's that?
I think the short code is g.co, and it's Google for News Partners. I think again we probably had the. Keep having these discussions on branding, but that's one site where we try to bring all the things together so you can look at it in different ways.
You're a publisher, you're a Press Gazette reader. What do you do if you want to work Google a bit more closely? Pick up the phone, probably not to you, but who's the person? How can they get in touch?
Well, I think most publishers actually have their contacts with us in different ways. As I said, we're kind of a large company. There's different ways. But if publishers are interested, they literally can drop me an email. I mean, madhav@google.com, M-A-D-H-A-V, my first name at google.com. Because, with such a large company like Google, sometimes it's hard to find the right people. And so a lot of my role and my team's role, and I have people in a number of countries, is that we play what I call almost air traffic controller, which is you're interested in this, right? If you're interested in cloud, I'm not the expert in cloud, but I can tell you the person who is, right? So you tell me what your issues are, and I can direct you in the right way.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So over the summer, we take a close look at the number of newspapers opening and closing. Over the summer in the UK, 18 local newspapers closed. It looks to me like the pace at which local newspapers are closing is getting quicker now, over the last year especially, as the advertising models come under a lot of stress. And we would argue that, you know, whether it's your fault or not, the fact of the matter is that the new ad money is going to Facebook and Google. it's not, people aren't spending that money on local newspapers, and it's a big problem for them. Is that something, I mean, set aside who's to blame for it, what's the, is it something you're concerned about, the fact that the local news, because it's where stories originate, mm-hmm. isn't it, and I mean, is it something you're concerned about? And,
absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, we're very conscious that we operate within, you know, an information ecosystem, and local is a very important part of that. And, you know, the travails of the local news industry are very troubling overall for lots of different reasons. I think, again, it's important to diagnose some of the issues there. And there's a number of different reasons, and absolutely revenue is one of those issues. But so also is cost, right? And, you know, we haven't even talked about the pension stuff. You know, in some of I read that article, but I've been following the local news industry issue for a while. And again, I think people have diagnosed, you know, there's a number of different causes there and a number of different solutions. So if you look at, you know, there are successful and growing local news organizations, you know, and people are buying them as well, right? I was interested to see that there was a Norwegian billionaire who's investing more in Johnson Press, right? So, you know, if this is a market that that is, you know, deadly and dying, billionaires don't get to be billionaires without being pretty smart. Yeah. So I think it is definitely challenged, but I think that there are hopefully enough signs that there are ways to experiment and iterate and see what we can do to help the overall ecosystem.
Is it local news, helping the local news industry innovate and survive, hopefully? Is that kind of a priority for Google when it comes to your news partnership stuff?
Yeah, we have quite a lot of interest in the local news side from as part of the DNI, which is, as I said, our framework for engagement with the news industry. And actually, I was talking with a local news publisher recently, and we were talking about local overall. I was trying to learn a bit more, and I said to him, I said, my theory is that the local news industry in a country is often gets lumped in with the national news industry, but actually it probably has more in common with the local news industry in another country than it does with the national in its own country. And I said, that's my theory, is that true? And he said, yes, it is. And actually it started a discussion about how do we get a dialogue going with local news publishers across countries so that they can share best practice. And so he has some ideas on his own that he just wants to go off and run with, and he said he wants to take the DNI concept like TED and TEDx and come up with a DNIX concept and do something with local. So we'll see how we can support him on that.
Digital News Initiative, just for people who don't know, it's €150 million in grants, isn't it, over 3 years. And we're coming into the third year now, is that right?
So the Digital News Initiative, DNI, sorry for using all the TLAs, the three-letter acronyms, is our framework for engagement, as I said. It's got three pillars to it, and the innovation pillar is the one you're talking about the fund.
Yeah.
So we're going into the third year. We very soon we will be announcing round four of the fund, so I guess it's the second year, since we're doing two a year. If we're announcing round four, so it's the end of the second year. And that will be announced very soon. We've stated on our website that for round four that we would like to have projects in the medium and large tracks to focus on monetization. Because actually in all the dialogue that we've had, particularly with the DNI Founded Council, which is the fund element is run separately from Google, and we have an independent council that make the decisions. But the council and other members and participants in DNI have been saying to us that the biggest challenge, as you've rightly pointed out, actually through, you know, I think the origin of your campaign is about the biggest problem facing the news industry, which is monetization.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do with round four of the fund is to try and get some of the creativity and energy within the news ecosystem to focus on the biggest problem, which is we are told is monetization. And more information will be available on our website in the next week or so about the round four of the fund. And again, small plug, that's digitalnewsinitiative.com.
Yeah, no, well, useful info. So you're across not just UK, Europe, Middle East, Africa?
Yeah.
Asia as well? No.
Just no.
What do you do you find there's similar issues to the ones we've got in the UK across your patch?
Actually, I find I'm relatively familiar with some of the global side, and I work with my global counterparts.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of variation, both within Europe and also globally. And if I had to generalize, and you know, I'm Indian, I also grew up in Indonesia, so I, you know, if I look at Asia, for example, Asia is really interesting to me for a number of reasons. The most interesting one for me is just their attitude to digital is they're almost all in on it. So they are very forward-looking, they are very experimental, they're doing a lot of different things, which I think is very interesting, and you see the kind of attitude and cultural shift is very different. I mean, I heard a number of years ago, I heard a Thai media magnate talk about, he ran a very successful magazine, and it made was making a lot of money in print, and he said, I'm shutting down the print operations in within probably 2 to 3 years. And everyone said to him, but you're making money, why are you doing that? And he goes, well, because I know that everything's going to go digital, and what I want to do is I want to maximize my ability to do that. And it was just such a brave and forward-thinking thing that attitude, I thought, was very refreshing, right? I think if you look in the U.S., for example, you see the growth of a lot of digital-only publications that are really high quality. If you look at things like Quartz and Vox, who I particularly like, I think that's good. But coming back to, you know, my patch, there's an enormous amount of diversity, right? And I think one of the interesting things that we sort of accidentally created through DNI by being a European initiative is we've created a European community that are having a lot of dialogue. We had an event in July about the third pillar of DNI, the fund, where we had a number of recipients of the fund come and showcase what they were doing, explaining what they were doing. And it was great to see the collaboration and the kind of cross-fertilization. I mean, there was a fascinating talk I went to about collaboration between news companies. And there was one in Portugal and one in Belgium. And the Belgium one was actually local publishers, if I recall correctly. And what really touched me was they said, look, you know, we often talk to each other, but we really probably wouldn't have collaborated in this way if it hadn't been for DNI. And I think that is a good thing. And somebody sent me a video, it was in Dutch, but of the CEO of Media House, which is a publisher in Belgium, talking about what they've been doing through DNI as well. And he was almost like, we should have created it ourselves. And that, you know, my view is, If we are experimenting and iterating and stimulating, that's great.
What are the do you have examples of things outside the UK that you've seen that are working well?
So, I think there are the difficulty of this is even though we're kind of 18 months into the fund element of it, products take a while to get up and running, right? So there were a lot of interesting examples, but they're still at early stages. But I think there's some very interesting kind of conceptual ones. The one, you know, I mentioned the one in collaboration. The one I was interested in Portugal is the publishers are getting together and creating a single sign-on login system, right? So that you're able to sign in once, and then they're able to know more about their users in a collective manner, which I think is really interesting. I thought the other thing that I noted from the fund pillar of DNI, which I thought was really intriguing, is that in the first two rounds of the fund, if I recall correctly, there was about a dozen, if not more, fact-checking initiatives. And this is before fake news was even a term. And what I found really interesting about that is I felt like the ideas are there in the ecosystem, and we were stimulating that, but then when fake news became the thing and fact-checking became a thing, actually we had been supporting that already because I think the ecosystem understood that beforehand, but it needs some stimulus to try and keep developing and keep it going.
One of the criticisms people sometimes make to me is that Google's not very helpful if you're trying to run a paywall model, so you're more helpful if it's free news access model, which I guess would make sense because Google's a free service, basically, isn't it? Is that fair enough? And, you know, I mean, I guess there's a good chance, isn't there, if the advertising continues to dry up at the rate it has, that most serious publishers are going to have to move to a paywall model, aren't they?
Well, I think we are business model agnostic. And I think the role, again, goes back to the role that we play. I think with a paywall publisher, we play that role of sampling, right? And, you know, that's a really important thing. As any paywall publishers, and I've had discussions with a number of them, right? You know, they think about the concept of the funnel, right? And what they do is they want to get their content to as broad an audience as possible to get them through the funnel to get to people to pay, right? We always sometimes you always think about a paywall publisher as just about the people that are paying, but actually you need to think about the top of the funnel. And so Google plays that role in terms of that sampling, and there's definitely much more that we can that we can do there. And we're having, you know, again through DNI, we're having a dialogue about some of the things that we can do to help and enable that more. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that the future of new as business models, as I see it, and this is my personal observations rather than anything else, is that people need multiple revenue streams, right? And I would say from the ones that I've seen, that goes beyond just whether it's advertising and pay, but there's things like, and I think you're doing it yourself, you're doing events and other things like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's a multi-revenue approach.
Yeah. And I guess, so, I mean, like or not, if you're a news publisher with a website, you're going to get about a third of your traffic probably from Google, a third from Facebook, a third from direct, I think, maybe if you've got an okay mix. What are the sort of things, nuts and bolts things, that maybe a small publisher is struggling a little bit can do to increase their visibility, to improve that third that they get from Google? Because it's such a massively important part of the mix, isn't it, in terms of your discoverability?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because, you know, Google never talks about SEO, search engine optimization, and I'm not a technical person at all, but when people have asked me these questions, sometimes I found it's amazing what's publicly available that people don't know about.
Yep.
And I have to confess my own ignorance. When I was, you know, when I was at the BBC, I used to complain about stuff, and, you know, and someone said, and the Google person said, well, have you submitted a sitemap to Google News? And of course, I didn't even know what that meant. And I was like, I'm sure we have. It's ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. I went back and I asked our technical team. I said, have we submitted a sitemap to Google News? And they were like, oh, no. Right. So, you know, without sounding ridiculous, you can Google this issue. But I also think that what I would suggest, particularly for news publishers, is we have something called the Publisher Center for Google News. And that's where you can go in, can submit a sitemap, but you can find out all the kind of best practice things that you should be doing to maximize your exposure, particularly within Google News, things like editor's picks, and you can decide what you want and what you don't want. And this is an area where we do complete control from a Google News perspective. And of course, Google Search has the Webmaster Tools area, which is the equivalent. But it is still amazing to me how much is kind of publicly available that people don't really exploit as much as they should.
And there's insights for search as well, isn't there? So you can look at what people are searching for, can't you, in your area, in your patch.
Yeah, and I'm also a big fan of Google Trends. And again, this goes back to the feedback. I don't know if you've used Google Trends, but the product used to be showing how you can see in countries the what people are searching for. And the feedback we got from publishers was, this is great, but the product at the time was 24 hours old, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could find out what people were searching for yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And the news publishers were like, this is useless.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we worked with the product team, and now it's, you know, it's pretty much live. And again, that is a really useful tool that journalists and others use right now. And we developed it that way based on feedback.
So looking down the track a little bit, it's difficult to look into the future, but as far as Google's strategy for the future is concerned, do you think you can see Google doing more to help press, doing more to help the regional press in particular, their struggles? You know, is that something that's on the agenda?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think yes, we are definitely going to be doing more. I think, you know, as I said, we've got an existing framework with DNI, which we will continue to work with on the product side, on the training and research side. And as I said, we've got three more rounds of the fund to come up. But in terms of the specific kind of topic areas, I think you're absolutely right that local is an important one, and we're looking at that a lot, talking with local publishers. As I said, hopefully we're also stimulating local publishers to talk amongst themselves. But we definitely do want to continue on the path that we're on and do more. And we also do want to continue with the dialogue because we need the feedback, right? You know, it's the feedback that helps create the really interesting things, right? You know, it was the feedback that helped create AMP. And it was the feedback about kind of complexity of video that helped create the YouTube Player for Publishers program, you know, and other things like that. So we definitely want to continue with that feedback. We really appreciate DNI. We appreciate the DNI working group that are helping us with that as well. But we want to continue on this track.
Look, final question for you. Thanks for your time. People say to me that they meet the Google representatives, local people like yourself, and great, really helpful. You know, all power to you. But they worry that the you get higher up the company, it's essentially a digital giant that's in a battle for eyeballs with Amazon, Facebook, and Apple, and you know that they fear that the news industry is kind of. Could be collateral damage in what is really you know we're small fry really compared to what the real purpose of the company is. I mean, and you say it's a company of morals, but do you think people high up the companies you got there are bothered about this stuff, or are they more worried about you know the bottom line and basically that share of the empire of the work?
No, they're very concerned about the news industry at the highest levels, and that was that point about the values, because Google's a company that, like I said, has values, and those values are shared throughout the company and actually come from the top. Mm-hmm. And if you look at DNI, DNI was sponsored by Sundar, our CEO, mm-hmm. right? You know, the announcements that you've seen have come from him, and he and his senior team are thoroughly involved in everything that we're doing. Actually, we report we report progress back to them. So, you know, the interest in the news industry is at the highest levels of Google.
Okay. Good to hear. Look, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.